This podcast is supported by JBS International Incorporated through a grant award from the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, with 0% finance with non-governmental sources. The contents are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement, by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government. For more information, please visit HRSA.gov.
Welcome into another episode of Rural Roads, the R-Corps podcast. I'm your host, Tim Rabel, with JBS International. Before we jump to today's episode, a few R-Corps TA reminders. Have you visited the R-Corps TA portal recently? Hopefully, that answer is yes, because it is the best way to stay up to date with all the latest and greatest R-Corps resources, info, and other opportunities. From the portal, you can dive into various toolkits or templates, engage with different learning modules on the LMS, visit our core corner and read past newsletters, rewatch past webinars, you get the idea. Also, be sure to connect with our core TA on social media. You can find us on Facebook, X, and Instagram. And now, let's get to today's episode. Welcome into another episode of Rural Roads, the R-Corps podcast. I'm your host, Tim Rabel, and today we're talking about recovery housing and a little bit about the landscape of substance use disorder with Dr. Ernie Fletcher, former governor of Kentucky, and currently the chief medical officer and a co-founder of the Fletcher Group. So thanks so much for joining, Dr. Fletcher.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
So I wanted to start off just with how did you get involved in this work from the get-go?
As governor of Kentucky, we developed something called Recovery Kentucky, and it came out of a program that I was familiar with when I was actually in Congress. We'd worked with the Hope Center in Lexington, Kentucky. It was very effective moving people from that were experiencing homelessness into meaning, purpose, and even into meaningful employment. And I took that, and that really was the impetus because we had 10 or 12 years of data coming out of that program in Kentucky. And we wanted to take that idea and some of the unique funding models we did that had made it possible and sustainable across the U.S. and thus, we founded the Fletcher Group to do that.
Perfect. I always think it's incredible on the site where it has a little bio about you. In the recovery space, you see a lot of kind of maybe overlap of different degrees. But with you, it has fighter pilot, board certified physician, and now all the work you do now. I think it's just incredible, different experiences over time. So thank you for that. Broad question to start off, but would you say what we're currently doing is working? And in specific respect to the increase in, you know, overdose deaths that we keep seeing.
Tim, let me bifurcate that or separate it. I think what we're doing in the harm reduction is good. We're saving lives. But I think there's a lot more work we can do. And I could say overall, we have to say, I don't think anyone would say, hey, we're meeting the goals we'd like to see. We'd like to be decreasing those overdose deaths. And the reason I think that we can do more is that when we start looking at not just providing people harm reduction, but that's only the beginning. You've got to intervene with that individual and make sure you're giving them all the opportunity to turn their lives around and get the help and the support they need to enter a recovery pathway. And that addresses those health-related social needs that are so important, especially with someone with SUD, because this disease, unlike any other disease, impacts those social determinants of health or health-related social needs more than any other disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just chatting with one of the first R-Corps grantees before this, and their project director is a person in recovery. I'm in recovery. And it's funny you mentioned that because I'm actually back home where I got into recovery. And it's every time I come home, I go back to those early days. And when I got into recovery at 18, and brain was still developing. And it's amazing when you can look back and been working in this field, see all those different pieces that were in place for me. And yeah, we just got to keep pushing on and make sure those same opportunities and services are available to all. So we definitely have a lot of work to do in that area. When you first founded Fletcher Group, what was the main goal? What was the kind of hope?
We had a simple mission. We wanted to increase the capacity and quality of recovery housing and recovery support services across the nation. And I think any organization, if you can have a nice, succinct mission statement like that or objective,
yeah,
it helps keep you focused and And I'm a person that likes to chase shiny objects, as you can tell from my bio, probably. But staying focused on that is what we've done. And that includes research so that we can measure the quality and help improve the quality and establish best practices. And it goes all the way from financing, which is extremely important because there's not a lot of good reimbursement streams for recovery housing and recovery support services. There's more developing. But everything that focuses on increasing the quality and capacity of recovery support services is what we're trying to do.
Wonderful. Can you talk a little bit about the recovery ecosystems model?
Yeah, I think it's thanks. We worked with East Tennessee State University and NORC, which is affiliated with the University of Chicago, on developing a recovery ecosystem index. And the reason we did that, because we've worked in now 47 states with projects. I think we're currently in about 35. And what we find is that when you go into especially rural communities, you have a much better impact if you can bring all the stakeholders and other individuals together. So that includes looking at things like the criminal justice system, where a lot of folks with SUD end up getting into that system, and being able to divert those people into treatment is a lot more effective. So you bring the healthcare system, the providers, housing authority, transportation, faith-based, you start bringing education from especially the vocation community colleges, as well as other institutions of higher education. So those are just, and I've probably left out a few, but you try to bring all those individuals in and look, is this community recovery friendly? Does it have the support services out there? What's the stigma in that community and how can we change that? So all of that is encompassed into a recovery ecosystem, because it does take all of those parties to provide that full continuum of care and spectrum of support, especially around the health-related social needs.
Yeah, yeah. And it ties in perfectly to the next question. Just how do we, you talked about social determinants of health, how do we collectively do better to address those health-related social needs? You touched on some of it just there with kind of building out the recovery ecosystem, but is there anything else you wanted to add?
I think it's important because a lot of the focus on the public policy has been directed at harm reduction and medication-assisted treatment, or MOUD. And I think if you look back at the history of clinical medicine, we, and I'll say we as a physician, have generally been poor at addressing the social determinants of health or the health-related social needs for individuals. And the reason is because it's something that's not taught in med school. It's not even taught in to looking at nurse practitioner or PA schools and things, or even among probably even a lot of your clinical educational programs don't necessarily address employment, housing, transportation, childcare, all of those things, and even becomes extremely more important as you're looking at individuals, especially on reentry. They can't even go out to get a job if they don't have a license, for example, or an identification.
Yeah.
Those are small things, but they become huge impediments for an individual in recovery. I think the first thing is to recognize that in the clinical system, those coordination of care processes haven't been well developed, and they can be a lot better developed. The other thing is that we don't reimburse very well for some of those health-related social needs. And there's a lot of silos in the program. You've got housing that sits alone. You've got transportation that's somewhere else. You've got childcare that's over here. You've got education that's here. Employment services are somewhere else. So it really is going to take an effort to first recognize the need of that full continuum of care and start putting really policies together on the public side of things that focus and recognize that. And secondly, start bringing organizations together that can, again, I'm going to come back to that recovery ecosystem, can bring those organizations together and find collaboration. That works especially in a rural community where you have a tighter connection to individuals. And it might be a little more difficult in your large urban areas, but in rural communities, that's doable. And I just think if we put a little more focus in realizing that the full continuum of care is what it's going to take to make someone find a successful recovery pathway.
Yeah, we'll stay on continuum of care and recovery housing specifically, because you're talking about this a little bit too, but how can you expect other positive outcomes if someone doesn't have a safe space, a roof over their head? Anything you want to expand on in terms of recovery housing's place within that continuum?
Extremely important, especially being in an environment that where individuals can get the support. And what we've seen in the data coming out of Recovery Kentucky programs is that peer support and peer interaction is very effective. And so I think it's something that we need to recognize across continued care. And there's more recognition giving, because I believe even in programs, the harm reduction and MAT programs and clinical programs are bringing in more peer support because they understand the efficacy of that peer interaction. So I think that's helpful. The recovery house kind of brings that all together in an environment that's safe. It's instructional. It provides some, I would say, loving accountability if it's done properly. And so it provides a safe place. And one of the things that we see is a sequelae of significant SUD is folks end up losing that connectedness. And some folks have said, and quote, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connectedness and being connected. Having that social support around you and people that care about you, not only love you and support you, but have some accountability there too. And a recovery housing environment that's done well provides that whole milieu of care around that individual. And it's been very effective. We've got, again, 12 years of data to show its efficacy.
Yeah, it was funny you mentioned that. I'm in a smaller recovery community than I'm used to. Delaware is not a huge state, but it was bigger. And I went to college in D.C., so there was a lot there. But where I am, where I currently live in Wisconsin, smaller recovery community, and there's a couple recovery houses, and they come out to the meetings together, and those folks stay around. They're so much more active and engaged, and you can almost see this like spark that kind of reminds me of when it clicked for me early on. And that community piece is just, it's there, just like you talked about. It's like a real life example of what you were just, describing.
So I think you make a great point. The good recovery houses are active in the community too, and in the self-help or mutual support groups that meet. And we even find that we bring in, I know Recovery Kentucky, a lot of relationship with faith-based institutions and things like Celebrate Recovery. That work and become part of the community so you can begin to knit together all those different silos, if you will, into a full continuum.
Yeah. Easier said than done, but so important. What can you say about value-based payment for recovery housing?
We've worked quite a bit on that, and on the national level, our CEOs worked on that with a group. But on the state level, we're working in Kentucky on that, because it's essential if we're going to expand services that address the health-related social needs, we've got to have a sustainable funding model. And the other thing is that recovery housing has been fraught with fraud and abuse. It's been a cottage industry. So our work is to professionalize that. And make sure you just bring the standards up so that clients, participants, and family members can have some kind of idea of the quality of housing that they're getting. And so value-based payment says that if we can start working with insurance company and government payers, Medicaid primarily, on us in a process that ensures that there are outcomes that you're measuring in order to validate value, then you do a couple of things. One, you supply the support, reimbursement, and sustainability for good quality homes that are measuring outcomes and have good outcomes. And the other thing is you expand that full continuum of care and the health-related social needs that we're talking about. So I think that's essential, and it's something we're working on, and I think there's some really good progress that we'll see over the next 5 or 10 years in that area.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. A couple questions just as we wrap up. For ARCOR grantees, are there particular resources or different ways to engage with Fletcher Group that could be particularly beneficial for their work and their role service areas?
And let me say this, so Tim, with you with JBS, you all have been great of helping connect us with other R-Corps grantees. It's really been very helpful because, like in any interaction, we often learn as much as we share. But I'll say this, we've got several resources. One, our website, if you go on and negotiate and navigate, if you can negotiate through it, it's getting so large. Mm-hmm. We're taking a new look at that.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of resources in there. We have a learning management system that currently has 75 courses on that. And you can access that through FletcherGroup.org on the website. And that provides courses on all sorts of things. One is on the integration of MOUD into recovery housing, which has been a challenge for some individuals. But it how to operate a house, some of the important things of that, recovery. Like I said, there's 75 courses there that cover a fairly large spectrum. So those resources are available. You can also go on there and request TA or technical assistance. And we're glad to work with others. Or if a group just wants to collaborate, they can connect us that way. And we'd be glad to collaborate. And if they see a need for some recovery housing support services the projects they're doing, or even just connecting with it, we'd be glad to do that. We enjoy working with the other grantees.
Fantastic. Yeah, for folks listening, we'll link to some of the resources on their site in the podcast description section for this episode on the R-Corps TA portal. And then just finally, more of a curiosity question. With the work you do today, was there anything that was helpful when you were governor or when you learned at Air Force that you feel like you apply today in this kind of field that helps with some of the specific projects you're working on or the conversations and in terms of getting things done?
I think the most important thing is that we've been very fortunate, very blessed to bring really a talented team together, but team with a lot of passion. And 25 or 35% of our folks have lived experience, and that's really been a great addition to the team. No one understands SUD better than folks that have lived it. And they become very effective because of that in understanding how to help individuals. Coming out of, I guess, the Air Force is just from that one thing is discipline and just keep focused on that was a target back then. We'll call it a mission now. But stay focused. And there's a lot to be done in the area of SUD or substance use disorder. And it's very easy to lose focus sometimes, but that's been extremely helpful. We've tried to focus on things that we feel like we want to do well, and that's the recovery support services, what kind of programs make an effective program. You get into the legalities of even fair housing issues and HUD funding, measuring outcomes, continuous quality improvement, all of those things are extremely important. And I think it's in my political career, the biggest thing is the people, the networking, the connection you make with people. And I mentioned earlier that connection is the opposite of addiction. Mm-hmm. And I'll say really connection, no matter what you're doing, and the networks that you develop is really the heart and the soul of effectiveness, I think.
Great place to end, and couldn't agree more. So thank you again for making the time. For folks tuning in, that was Dr. Ernie Fletcher with the Fletcher Group. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Tim.